Welcome back to the Jet Plane, Season 2, Episode 2.
Absolutely.
Double Deuce Episode 2-2. It is. So, Sai and I were just talking about a little bit of our summer plans, and Silas has a big week coming up, right, Silas?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Big week, not a whole lot of anything.
Going to the airport maybe once? Yeah. Summer's kind of a beautiful thing when you're a teacher.
Oh, absolutely.
Besides the fact that now you have to go to summer school at the end of June.
No, that's the best part.
Okay. You like going to school.
Oh, I do indeed. I do.
You're one of those people.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
How is the state of Vermont? Has it lived up to your expectations of it being the greatest state?
I think so. You know, it's very...
There was some hesitation in your voice there.
Yeah, it's a lot hotter than I thought it was, or at least last summer it was.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it's nice, it's quaint. It's all those kind of things.
Yeah. Mountainous, too, like Tennessee, right?
Not like Tennessee, no. See, the problem with Tennessee is they don't know how to make roads there. They made them all windy.
Yeah.
In Vermont, at least my experience has been that they are plowing through a little bit more. You know, they're getting through those areas without being unnecessarily windy.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah, Silas will argue that Tennessee is not a great state because of the roads.
I would 100%. I've been on a lot of those roads and looked at the sides and said, that's just as flat as where we're at right now. They could have built the road just a straight line. Instead, we're curving all over the road. All of a sudden, I'm puking my guts.
Yeah.
You know.
Not to get too far down this rabbit hole, but, you know, we've talked about ideal temperatures on this podcast before.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that our ideal states are just as opposite, basically, as our temperatures, and maybe for the same reason.
Uh-huh. I mean, would you say that,
you know, like Tennessee, Florida is your ideal state? Florida's up there, Tennessee's up there, gotcha. You know, Texas would be, you know, like those are nice states. Georgia, South Carolina, like those southern states with the beach, I think those would be ideal. North Carolina's good too.
Now, I don't have a ton against a ton of those states.
Yeah.
Some of them I'd like to visit, you know, but I'd like to visit parts of them where they can get a little bit colder. Like Texas, I'd really like to visit Amarillo sometime.
Okay.
I hear that that's a cool town. I'd like to visit it. But it snows there in the winter. You know, it gets cold, actually, because it's up the panhandle. And that being said, Florida, loss of a state. I know you mentioned that as one of your first ones.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Just, I mean, too dog
hot.
Water state.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Florida's probably up there as one of my tops for sure.
Oh, man,
you know, I don't know that I'd want to live in South Florida. Like that gets a little hot.
Really hot. Yeah.
Like it's you know, like up here when I play golf, the off season's in the winter time, obviously, because you can't really play if you got a foot of snow or something.
Yeah,
you know, no one's playing when it's, you know, 5 degrees outside. It's just not worth it. But in Florida, their off season's actually in the summer. I found this out.
Because it's too hot.
Right, yeah. No one enjoys it when it's 110 degrees and 100% humidity.
Yeah, for sure.
And so you get discounted prices in the summertime in Florida when you play golf there, versus here you get the discounted prices in the wintertime if you play golf here.
Interesting.
So it's kind of flip-flop.
The more you know.
But I will say, like, it'd be a beautiful thing to be able to play golf on Christmas morning. Think about how cool that would be, you know?
Yeah, that'd be, like, super cool.
We're just seeing things we can't do here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in other jet plane news, we were also talking about that there's a flight that went down recently.
That's true.
Air India flight. Pretty crazy. I feel like we always have to bring up any jet plane news, but...
Yeah.
You don't usually see a lot of those commercial planes go down. You know, a lot of times when there's a crash, it's like a small jet that had like 8 people or, you know, 16 people or something like that. But
oh, yeah.
I think they said 200.
That's crazy.
Something like 200 some people were on that flight.
Huh.
So, pretty sad stuff. But
absolutely.
Yeah, I feel you just don't hear a lot about that. I don't know what the cause was. I don't know if they've come out with it yet. They probably have a lot of like diagnosing that they have to do before they release anything, but yeah, pretty crazy stuff.
That is for
so,
sure.
Be in the back of the plane and keep your seatbelt on.
True.
That's what we've learned.
That's what we
have. I don't know if there's any survivors. I've seen some mixed reports that there was a guy that walked away, but other things say no survivors. So I don't know. But regardless, they got off the ground maybe 100 feet.
Uh-huh.
It looked like. I mean, it might have been more than that actually, but barely, and then just slowly descended, and then you just see I don't know.
Yeah,
so
makes you wonder what went wrong.
Right, they didn't get very far. So well, keep your seatbelts on, because we're about to experience some turbulence in the jet plane, in the cockpit ourselves.
Absolutely, yeah. We, I think it's been, you know, it's been an off season.
Yeah.
We've been back for one episode, and I've not played any lip service.
Oh, boy.
To my lit heads.
No, you know? Not this route.
To the lit heads. Our most devoted fans, our loyal fans.
Yeah.
Lit heads. And I wasn't really sure what I wanted to give for turbulence today. You know this, Joe. We came in here and I was kind of like scrambling to figure out what I wanted to do for my turbulence. And I thought I'd tell you about one of my favorite people, I guess, in the literary world.
Right.
Just someone I find kind of interesting. But not really necessarily like I don't want to say not a writer himself, because he was a writer. But really, he wasn't known for his writing so much. And that is the only teacher I consider a hero of mine. The only teacher I think I'd like to be like this guy. That is a guy named Whit Stillman. Now, actually, Whit Stillman, I thought to myself, I was like, I'm going to say Whit Stillman. Whit Stillman is not who I'm talking about here. I'm talking about Whit Burnett. Whit Stillman's a film director.
Okay.
Whit Burnett. Now, Joe, your familiarity level with Whit Burnett?
Zero.
Oh, I'm excited to let you know then.
Okay.
What this guy. Whit Burnett was a creative writing teacher. I had to think of the class he taught at Columbia University. Now, are you familiar with Columbia University?
South Carolina.
Not South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
The one in New York City.
Okay.
The Ivy League University.
Yeah, no. I know Columbia, South Carolina. That's what I was going off of. I have no idea.
No. So Columbia is one of the, I mean, it's up there with like a Harvard, a Yale, all that kind of stuff. And Whit Burnett taught there and taught creative writing classes and just had some of the, I mean, most important writers of the mid to late 1900s coming through there. Like pretty much like 1940 onwards, had like some of the most important writers of all time coming through there. And what Whit Burnett did was that he ran the school's magazine, which was called Story Magazine, which kind of took on a life of its own. Like, it was a literary magazine for the school, the way a lot of schools will have, like, literary magazines. But it became kind of its own bigger thing that other authors would contribute to pretty frequently, and became pretty renowned. And what he would do was he would kind of use these classes less as, like, classes and more like he was scouting for writers. Like, I feel like if you look into his legacy, it seems almost like he was more enamored with, like, scouting future writers than he was with actually teaching.
Yeah.
I think that's why I like
that. That's how you get your legacy right there. Yeah. It's like, I don't want to teach these people anything, but I want all the
adoration.
Yeah, exactly.
And it even, like, it got to the point where, like, at least, oh, man, I wish that I could remember exactly what the story was here. So I could give you exact numbers. But there was a class that he did one time with one of the authors I'll talk about that was, I think it was like a 5-minute class. And then he just dismissed everyone because he just wanted to like kind of talk to this writer about something he was having trouble with his writing. So he brought everyone in and talked to all of them about it. And he was like, all right, cool. See you guys later. End of class.
Yeah.
It was like 5 minutes. But through that process, he became really, really like important to the, I mean, to the literary development of the United States, because he was so good at scouting all these people. Like, they called him one of the, I think the article I was reading said he was like one of the greatest literary bird dogs of all time, which is a sick, sick title.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be a bird dog for sure.
Yeah.
But just discovered some really important people, like, and I know these names might not mean a whole lot to you, Joe.
Not.
People like Tennessee Williams, Richard Wright, John Cheever, who we've talked about quite a bit.
He
discovered John Cheever, or like helped to discover John Cheever. And then the one that he really kind of cemented his legacy with, and the one that he had that 5-minute class for, was a guy named J.D. Salinger, who we've talked about J.D. Salinger, I think, on here before.
It sounds familiar, yeah.
But he wrote Catcher in the Rye.
Oh, okay.
So probably one that you're at least like familiar with that book.
Yeah.
But yeah, just an interesting, kind of unique guy in that he had such a big impact, but really was not, at least importance-wise, not really like a writer.
Right.
Really more of a scout.
Hmm.
So.
Okay.
There we go. That's Whit Burnett. I try to live up to his legacy. every year by scouting my student papers.
Right, and I'm
like, which one of these kids do I need to really influence so they can thank me later on? Yeah.
Which one of these kids is going to make it big time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Well, there's your turbulence.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
for the lit heads.
Sure. For the lit heads.
The lit heads get the most amount of interesting facts, you know.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's because I, in my heart, I'm a lit head too.
Right. No, I think we know this. All right. Well, we're expecting a fairly smooth flight for the rest of the trip. So, yeah, keep your seatbelts on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more that I fly, the more that I really, like, they're always telling you to put your seatbelts on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, they're like, you know, when we get up to cruising altitude, we'll turn the seatbelt sign off. Then they do, but then we hit a little bump, and they're like, put your seatbelts back on.
Yeah.
And then they keep it on for, like, 2 hours, because I think they just forget about it.
They tease you with that seatbelt.
Yeah,
sign.
And then they turn it off, and then sometimes, and this is kind of one that gets me, but I understand why, but, like, when they have the seatbelt sign on, the flight attendants sometimes will, like, yell at you if you stand up, like, no, sit, go take a seat, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
And sure. Like, this is a guy gets up to go to the bathroom, no, take a seat, sir.
Like, yeah, it's like,
you know, what are you doing in emergency, you know?
Yeah.
You're just like, just sit there and figure it out, you know, like,
your seat, I guess.
Right. Yeah, it always makes me laugh.
Oh man.
Anyways, all right, so as Silas and I talked last episode, this season's going to feature a little bit new style in the sense of we're going to have a little game on here every week. When we have visitors, we have, you know, special guests on here, we're going to play a special game with them as well. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, next week we're expecting to hear from your dad, Sam Risley.
Mm-hmm.
Just got back from a trip to Ethiopia and South Sudan and Somalia, Eritrea area.
Oh, yeah.
One of his 5410 trips. And so... since we've had the off season, your dad's been in, I don't even know how many, probably close to 20 countries.
Oh yeah, it seems like it. Yeah. He's been all over.
Since our off season, he's got a lot more to do this year. So, yeah, that'll be a fun episode. So look forward to that next week, and we'll try to come up with a fun game for him too.
Yeah, yeah. Keep
so,
him entertained at least.
Yeah. So the game that we have today is called Guess Their Age.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's going to feature, we stole this from another podcast again, you know. Shout out other podcasts. So, how this is going to work is I've compiled a list of 10 people. It could be anybody. 10 people. And Silas has to guess their age. Silas gets 15 lives for 10 people. Every age, he's off. Meaning, if the person is 30 and he guesses 33, you lose 3 lives.
Mm-hmm.
So, every age that you're off, you lose a life. So you can do the math here. 15 lives, 10 people. Not a lot of room for error.
No, no.
Less than 2 per person.
Yeah.
Really 1 per person to be safe.
Oh, for sure.
Just a little more than 1. So, yeah, I think this will be pretty exciting. This is either going to go... You're either going to knock this out of the park or lose it in the first 3, is my guess.
Oh, yeah. If I get 10 for 10 here...
Yeah.
I'm buying a lottery ticket after this. Yeah. I'm telling you that right now.
Yeah, if you don't lose a single life, that would be incredible.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Most incredible.
Because I can't imagine this is going to be based off knowledge. This is certainly going to be guesses.
Yeah. So. Well, it's guesses, but I think that you could give a pretty good estimate.
Approximation? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I tried to pick people in your realm that you'd know.
Okay.
You know, I didn't give you any wild athletes that you'd never heard of. You know, that.
Yeah.
Nothing like that. All right, so we're going to start off with one that I think, hopefully, again, you know, even if you know these people, it's hard to know their ages exactly. But at one point, I know one of your top favorite actors. Okay, mm-hmm. I don't know now, might change, but Ed Norton.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Starting off with a good one here.
Now, I don't know if I'd consider him a favorite anymore, but certainly he's a guy I respect.
Okay.
Now, Ed Norton, it's a tough one, that's a tough one. I mean, he's been pretty steadily working, I think, that anyone could say, since the 90s.
Okay.
He's... The most recent one I think of with him is he played Pete Seeger in that Bob Dylan movie. And Pete Seeger was an older guy.
Uh-huh.
And Ed Norton, it wasn't like he had to change a whole lot. I think he just shaved down his hairline.
Okay.
And so I'm thinking, like, oh, this is an older guy.
Okay.
And I don't know why... There's one number that's just calling out to me.
Okay.
It's calling out to me. It's like, oh, that's the one. 58.
58. He is 55.
Ooh, 55.
Three off. Down to 12.
That's rough. I should have known. Round numbers.
Down 12. Okay. Next one. We're going to switch it up a little bit here.
Okay.
Completely random. We're going to go Miley Cyrus.
Miley Cyrus. Okay. Now, Miley Cyrus seems like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, when we were growing up, she was on Hannah Montana.
Right.
So she can't be incredibly, incredibly older than we are.
Right.
I'm going to guess 32.
32 it is.
Whoa, look 32 at that. It look is.
You're going to need some of those. You're going to need some of those. Especially, some of those snags. Missing three lives in the first one.
Yeah, the first one was practice. I'm locked in now. I'm getting everyone right from now on.
Okay, that sounds good. Next one, we're going to go with comedian slash actor Kevin Hart.
Comedian slash actor Kevin Hart. Now, Kevin Hart, I feel like is a guy that's going to be older than I expect him to be. Okay. I feel like he's got a lot of energy.
Yeah.
But I think that it's like...
Yeah, we were talking about this. Comedians can be tough.
Yeah, for sure.
I get you.
Because they've got to have a lot of energy as part of the job.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily reflect their age. Now, there is a... There's a clip with Kevin Hart that has some language in it.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's referencing... Maybe you know the clip if I'm talking about it. But Don Cheadle, the actor,
mm-hmm.
talks about how old he is, and Kevin Hart responds.
Oh, okay. And, I don't think I know that one, but yeah.
I'll have to show it to you later.
Okay.
In a way that would make me think that Kevin Hart's not super, super old.
Okay.
But I think, I feel like he's mid-40s. I'm going to go 46.
46? Okay. 45.
Oh, I was 45. Close.
All right. That's not bad, though. Close. You can get away with that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. I got 15 lives?
You got 15 lives. You're down to 11.
Okay.
You're down to 11 lives. Okay, let's go Kendrick Lamar.
Kendrick Lamar, okay.
Yep.
Kendrick Lamar, I feel better about that one. Like, I feel like I'm in the range on that one.
Okay.
37.
37 it is. It's impressive. That's impressive.
Like, I mean... Call me Bradley Cooper because I'm the American sniper here. Snipe that one.
All right. Leonardo DiCaprio.
See, Leonardo DiCaprio, he's an interesting one because he's known for dating girls significantly younger than
yes.
him. So I feel like I've read his age at some point
yeah.
in one of these articles about that.
Exactly.
He... Oh, man. 45.
That one's going to hurt you a little bit, Si.
50. 50. Oh, 50. Tough.
Down that's to tough. Six. You're down to six lives.
I need some more snipes.
Six lives and you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 left.
Okay.
It's doable for sure. It's very doable.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go Harry Styles.
Harry Styles. Mr. Watermelon Sugar himself.
Right. Yeah.
Seemingly, he would be pretty young. Oh, man. See, the problem is I'm more of a Niall Horan guy myself,
as far as
One Direction goes. But I'm going to go, I think Harry Styles is a cool 31.
He is 31. He is 31. Nice. That helps a lot.
That does.
That helps a lot. I can't lie. All right. This one, I don't know if this is going to be hard or not. I think it's going to be harder than the other one so far.
Mm-hmm.
John Bon Jovi. Yeah.
Okay. See, I think of... I couldn't even tell you what John Bon Jovi looks like.
Right.
Couldn't even pick him up in a lineup.
Right.
So the rest of these people, I can kind of go off looks.
Yeah.
Can't do that for him.
Yeah.
All I can do is say this guy was making songs in the 80s.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I feel solid about saying 67.
67. Okay. He is 63.
That one, that hurts.
That hurts. You're down to two lives, Si.
Okay, okay.
Down to two lives.
And how many do I have left?
You have three
people?
Left.
Three people. Okay.
Three left.
I need some snipes.
You need some snipes. But they're definitely doable snipes here.
Okay, okay.
Okay. You're gonna have to nail it down.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the next one. Zendaya.
Another one who was, I mean, when we were kids, was on the Disney Channel.
Mm-hmm.
When we were a little older, though. So I think she's closer to our age.
Right.
She strikes me. Strikes me as 28.
28! That is it. Nice. Okay.
Nah.
All right. Two lives, two people. Two lives, two people, Si.
All right.
All right. There's an old and a young, okay?
Okay, okay.
Morgan Freeman,
okay. Now he's old. That's a tough one.
This is a tough one. I knew this was going to be tougher. That's why I saved it closer to the end. I was hoping that you had some more lives built up, but I've got confidence.
Yeah.
I got confidence that you could get it.
I think Morgan Freeman is in his 90s.
Okay.
I'm going to guess 92.
Not quite. 88.
It's no good.
All right, and then the last one, just for kicks and giggles, was Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, Tim Chalamet is, he's 29.
He is 29.
Because if he would have won the Oscar, she would have
been
the Oscar.
Dang, so you're two off.
Yeah.
That's off.
I want you to know that's the only one I for sure knew.
Yeah.
Like, I actually knew that one.
I should have gave that one to you first. But I didn't want to do Zendaya and Chalamet. They're about the same age.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I wanted to switch up the ages, you know. But
for sure.
That was pretty good. I think that was good.
I did better than I expected.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, and like we were talking about, you know, you could miss one by 10 if you really don't know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like
yeah,
a John
for sure.
Bon Jovi, you know.
Yeah, that what four if he was much better than I thought it was going to be.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't miss any more by... Five? I think five was the biggest miss that you had.
Mm-hmm.
Which, that hurts, but...
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's a pretty fun one. I like that game.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you did pretty well. I don't know how I would do, you know... I could have some athletes or whatever in there, but we'll play it another time as well and see how I do.
We'll have to switch the tables at some point.
Yeah. All right, Si, well, what do you got for us today?
Yeah, so as me and Joe were kind of talking about what we wanted today's podcast to look like, we talked about maybe on occasion doing some mini devotionals where one of us just kind of gets something ready. Doesn't have to be anything super super in depth or anything like that, and so for today I was the one who got something ready.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to, before I talk about what I've got here, I want to kind of take you through my thought process in picking this, Joe.
All right.
So my thought process was that at times, whenever I'm like opening up my Bible,
mm-hmm.
I feel like I get intrigued or get interested in these books that don't get as much, I mean, for lack of a better word, as much airplay.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you got some of these books in the Bible that aren't things that are getting returned to like super, super frequently.
Yeah.
Whether that's in like sermons or whether that's in like, I don't know, other podcasts or like whatever that looks like. And I feel like those books always intrigue me. Because I'm like, oh, what's going on in there that I haven't really heard about?
Yeah.
And usually, you know, you get into something it's like, oh, this, I feel like I understand why this isn't getting much airplay.
Yeah.
But I think it's still cool to check out. And so as I was kind of deciding what I wanted to pull today, I was looking at some of those books, and I stumbled upon, let's say, 3rd John.
Okay.
You know, I don't know the last time you read 3rd John.
3rd John. But, you know... Interestingly enough, it was fairly recently in our Bible study.
There we go.
Not that recently, months ago.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I don't think I've ever read 3rd.
Because it's just one chapter, right?
It is.
Yeah. And it's short.
For sure. But I thought, I'll check there. I'll see what's going on there. And I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's a letter. It's an epistle. And it's essentially kind of a letter centered around hospitality, from what I was able to read pretty quickly
mm-hmm.
on it. But there's a verse in here that I think is a cool one for a couple of different reasons. And so I'm just going to kind of go through what I pulled from it, what I found interesting from it, and then we can just kind of talk yeah. a little bit, and then go from there. So this was in 1 John, or not 1 John, sorry, 3 John 1, verse 11. And it says, "Dear friend, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. Anyone who does what is good is from God. Anyone who's done or who does what is evil has not seen God." Anything on its surface, that's pretty, I don't want to say obvious, but kind of obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, yeah, do the right thing. That seems pretty standard, pretty straightforward. But what I liked about it, what made it stand out to me, wasn't necessarily just that, like, real quick mantra of, like, oh, do the right thing, God wants you to do what's right. But the way that it ends, where it says, anyone who does what is evil has not seen God.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel like that leaves it very, very open to, like, people who are doing evil aren't beyond doing good. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't say, like, oh, people who are doing evil are intentionally opposing God. It's saying people who are doing evil haven't seen God.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of leaves it open a little bit there, where it's like, oh, there's the opportunity that if they do see God, they'll start to do good.
Right.
That I think is kind of cool. I like the way that that's worded. And so that's kind of what made it stick out to me and made me want to pick that one.
Yeah.
Was that kind of insinuation of there's a chance for those who are doing evil.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the thing that I think of immediately is in Acts. I believe it's in Acts. When Paul is converted, and he's, you know, having Christians killed for following Jesus, and then all of a sudden, you know, on the road to Damascus, he's blinded and sees God and has this whole conversation and is called to reach these Gentiles. And
mm-hmm.
basically is one of, if not the most influential person of the early church, starting the early church and really developing it.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's kind of one of those things, like he's doing evil and sees God and changes his ways. And
mm-hmm.
I think it kind of goes back to, like, if we could all actually see God in all his power, there would be no doubt.
Oh, 100%.
Like how much control he has, how much he's in charge. You know, we fret a lot of small things. But mm-hmm. yeah, like, if you could actually see God, I think that it's not even palatable. Like, there's no doubt about it. You know?
Yeah. And I think, I don't know. I think, I'm glad you brought up that example, because I wasn't even thinking about that necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it changes the way I think about, like, seeing God. Because mm-hmm. I feel like when I read that verse at first, or when I did it first, I thought, like, seeing God is like, oh, people who haven't been told
right.
about God yet, yeah. or people who don't, like, have the information or whatever. But Paul had the information, and he was, right. like, willfully choosing not to
mm-hmm.
Follow Jesus' teachings and things like that. I mean, intentionally so, because he didn't necessarily believe that Jesus was the Messiah.
Yeah.
And then when he actually did, like, see God, and have that moment of revelation, it did completely change everything.
Right. And obviously, you know, I don't think a lot of those experiences necessarily happen today. Like, I don't think God's yeah. going to come down and, like, blind you and call you into something. You know, maybe. I don't know. I don't want to speak for anybody. But
yeah.
that's not how it happened for me or for most people that I know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, like you said, I think that seeing God can be through other people. Or, I don't know. I think of, you know, times when someone has something really bad in their life, a tragedy, you know, someone dies, someone gets cancer, whatever, and the church kind of surrounds them and prays with them and encourages them and gets them through a tough time.
Yeah.
I think they see God through a lot of that, you mm-hmm. know, like you through see,
that community.
Right, because a lot of times I think in this world you have friends, but a lot of times they're friends for hanging out or friends for the good time, you know, fair weather friends or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that part of what makes the church unique, in the church being Christians, you know,
yeah,
that, you know, I feel like it's strongest in hard times
mm-hmm.
of getting through things. And there's obviously lots of victories, but I think that, you know, we know the world is a broken place, and pulling each other through is kind of a way to show others, you know, to see God.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And I think too, even in those good times, I'm just thinking of some people that I know that have recently come come to Christ. I feel like a lot of times it comes from a place of rock bottom. But I think as a church family, we also celebrate in those high times when we really see God. And mm-hmm. you think of someone like the life of David, when he had really low times.
Oh, yeah.
I think that there are some incredible moments when he has wrote different psalms or whatever of laments, and he, you know, fasted. You know, you think of Bathsheba, and he knew his child was going to die, and he fasted for 7 days.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
when his child died, he immediately cleaned up and just went and worshiped God.
For sure.
Which is crazy. But I think he also had moments of extreme highs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bringing the Ark of the Covenant back to its place. You know, he celebrated and he said, you know, I'll become more undignified than this. I think there's a lot of victories too. And yeah, it's very interesting. That's a cool verse. I would have like randomly picked out.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, it's a good reminder of like a lot of the examples that we talked about, like Paul and David and all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. Involve like being humbled
yeah
before you can see God.
Yeah.
And so I think that we can like, I guess, I don't know, consider that in this as well, as yeah. like the importance of being humbled, like you say, like that rock bottom that David was at, or even Paul. I think that inarguably he was at a rock bottom too. He's at a point where like just physically he can't see, he can't do anything for himself, and he has to rely on, you know, other people
yeah.
Getting to where he needs to be and all that kind of stuff. And so, I don't know, I feel like, yeah, that humbling, that rock yeah. bottom is an important part of this too, so.
Yeah, humility is a big step for sure. I think that's kind of, you know, I think of, you know, a quote that I use a lot from, I think, as a missionary. He said, you know, only one life will soon be passed, only what's done for Christ will last. Mm-hmm. I think we have a lot of big plans and a lot of big schemes in our lives of like, oh, I want to do this one day and I want to do this, and we get caught up with that stuff. But mm-hmm. like, I mean, like we talked about that plane crash, like you never know when your life would just
change like that.
Be done.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, it's like at the end of the day, if I died today, what have I done in the last week, in the last month or whatever that's beneficial for eternity? You know, it talks yeah. in the Bible about storing up for heaven, and it's like, you know, what am I doing? Am I just going through the motions, going to work, and doing whatever. And mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I like it.
Lots of food for thought.
Lots of food for thought. Yeah, that really, you know, delves into a lot. But, yeah. All right, Si, since you brought it, one sentence summary, a challenge, or an encouragement.
Okay, I would say one sentence summary. I would say that if you are in a place in your life, this is going to be a run-on sentence.
Okay, I like run-on sentences. I'm not a grammar Nazi.
If you're in a place in your life where you're doing good, as the verse says, then that's a good indicator that you've seen God in some capacity in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's your, this is kind of a, I guess, an encouragement, but also a challenge a little yeah. bit. And so then it becomes your responsibility to help others see God.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, help others see God.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely a run-on sentence.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
When I say one sentence, I don't mean, you know, I just mean short and concise. We went into a lot of things, but I think, yeah, that is good. So, all right, well, there you have it. 3 John, chapter 1.
Oh, yeah, verse right. 11.
Yeah, and we'll see you next week, hopefully, with Sam, and talk a little bit about his trip. So, be looking mm-hmm. forward to that.
Yeah,
we'll
sure.
see you next week.
See ya.